Well, this is Robert Jones, and I'm president of the Kennesaw Historical Society, and I've been president for about 15 years. When I signed on, I hadn't intended it to be for life, but at the moment it seems to be. And I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the History Podcast.
Welcome back to History Podcast. This is episode 66. I'm back! Thank you all for hanging in there while I was on my business trip. I got back earlier this week. If you're new to the show, welcome. You can find more information about this podcast at historypodcast.blogspot.com. Also, as you just may have heard, this is a very special podcast for y'all this week. My good friend Christy from Psychology and Podcast for Good was able to meet me while I was on my business trip. We met at Kennesaw Mountain National Battlefield Park. As you heard in the beginning of the podcast, Robert Jones will be giving us the lowdown on Kennesaw, Georgia. You may also have heard the large booms in the background as he gave his introduction. There were reenactors outside the museum at a park during our recording. The reenactors were firing off cannons. You also heard a bugler from the Kennesaw Mountain National Battlefield Park that Christy was kind enough to record for me. Next, I'd like to play the interview that Christy co-hosted with me while we were at the Southern Museum of Civil War and Locomotive History, which is also in Kennesaw, Georgia. And now for our interview with Robert Jones, president of the Kennesaw Historical Society. You may notice that my voice and Christy's are a lot lower than Robert's. This is just a result of real-life recording. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Robert Jones, and I'm president of the Kennesaw Historical Society.
And I'm Jason Watts, host of History Podcast. So thank you for joining us for a moment here, and so we could talk about Kennesaw.
Uh-huh.
I don't have any specific questions, so could you just give us a little background, starting with the general?
Well, it's always dangerous to ask that broad of an open question to a president of a historical society, but starting with the general, which is probably the most famous thing that happened in the 19th century in Kennesaw, we can get to the 20th century in a moment if you want. In 1862, there was a railroad that ran from Atlanta all the way up to Chattanooga, and it was called the Western and Atlantic. And a group of Union raiders, it was one civilian and 22 mostly Ohio soldiers, came up with a plan to essentially hijack the general while it was on its way from Atlanta up to Chattanooga. And the plan was to, after they stole it, and they were going to steal it in Big Shanty, which is what Kennesaw was called before it was called Kennesaw. The idea was they were going to steam it north. They would stop, tear up track, cut telegraph wires, and hopefully burn the bridges, because the bridges back then were all made out of wood. And the event occurred about 6:15, 6:20 in the morning on April 12, 1862. The raiders actually boarded the train in Marietta, and it came up to Kennesaw, and it stopped for a 20-minute breakfast break at the Lacey Hotel. So pretty much everybody got off the train at that point, including the engineer and the conductor, and all went in to eat breakfast. And that's when Andrew's raiders got out of the passenger cars, and they went forward, and they stole the locomotive. And that started an 87-mile chase. And the reason it's so famous today isn't so much that they stole the train, it's that the conductor of the train, William Fuller, got really, really ticked off that they stole his train. And he started out running after them. He ran for 2 miles after the train. They got up to Moon Station. He got what we call a pole car, which is just a little platform on wheels you put on the tracks, and then they have a pole, and you pole it along. And he used that all the way to the Etowah River. Now, we should point out that that's mostly downhill, so that's how he was able to do it. And when he got to the Etowah River, he commandeered the first of three different locomotives that chased the general. And after Kingston, they got so close to the back of the general that the general couldn't stop anymore to tear up tracks, couldn't stop to try to blow up the tunnel at Tunnel Hill or any of that. So the chase is really on. And at that point, they were very close. And the locomotive that Fuller was in at that point was called the Texas. And the Texas was actually traveling backwards, and the general was going forward. And today the Texas is in the Cyclorama in Atlanta, and of course the General is here. So eventually they got up to Ringgold. Andrew's Raiders weren't able to stop at that point to take on new fuel or take on more water because the pursuers were so close. They abandoned the General 2 miles north of Ringgold. They all scattered into the fields. Eventually all of them were captured. And that's really why it became the Great Locomotive Chase, why it's still famous today, is because that conductor chased them for 87 miles and he actually caught up to them. And some of them were hung, some of them escaped, made it back to Union lines, and some of them were part of a prisoner exchange. Andrews was hung, and there's a plaque down in Atlanta at the point that he was hung. And so the locomotive itself sat in Chattanooga for a long time in Union Depot, and in 1962 it did its centennial run under its own power from Atlanta back up to Chattanooga. It stopped here in Kennesaw. There were 10,000 people here. There were 12,000 people in Ringgold. And in 1967, the Louisville-Nashville Railroad, which by that point had owned what used to be the Western and Atlantic, decided to give the locomotive to the state of Georgia. So they actually took it out of the Union Depot in Chattanooga and they put it on a flat car and they were bringing it south. Somebody called the mayor of Chattanooga and said, "They're stealing your train." And he called out the state police. They blocked the railroad tracks and stopped the General from coming south. And that kicked off a 3-year battle in the courts. It ended up in the Supreme Court of the United States. Supreme Court refused to overturn a lower court ruling which gave ownership of the General to the Louisville-Nashville Railroad. And in February of 1872, the General was brought on a flat car to the old Fry Cotton Gin here in Kennesaw. They knocked down the back of it so they could put the General into it, and then they rebuilt the back. And so the General has been here since 1972. So when they built this new $6 million museum that we're sitting in here, in the original codicil, when the Fry Cotton Gin was donated to the city by the Fry family, part of the deal was the General had to stay in it from that point on. So when they decided to build a new museum, the city honored that original part of the original donation, and they built the new museum around the old cotton gin. So the General itself hasn't moved in 34 years. It's still sitting where it's been all that time, and the new museum was built essentially around it. So long answer, but that is the biggest thing that happened in the 19th century. 20th century is a whole different ballgame, so you want me to hit that next?
Sure, that would be wonderful if you could.
Well, up until about 1982, the most famous thing that ever happened in Kennesaw was the Great Locomotive Chase. And by the way, Walt Disney made a movie out of it in 1956 and 57, starring Fess Parker, and it was called the Great Locomotive Chase. In 1982, a town in the suburbs of Chicago called Morton Grove, Illinois, passed a law outlawing possession of handguns within the city limits. And this got nationwide headlines, even international headlines, for several weeks. And the city fathers within Kennesaw, and I'll mention some names in a moment, being, shall we say, of a more conservative bent than the city fathers of Morton Grove, Illinois, they kind of got annoyed that this was getting such big press banning handguns. So they decided to pass a law requiring the ownership of a gun by all residents who live within the city limits. And this was passed in May of 1982. Wow. Fred Bentley Sr., who is probably the most famous attorney in the history of Georgia, there's a bridge named after him where 75 and 285 cross. He's the one that wrote the law. Mayor Darwin Purdy was the mayor at the time, J.O. Stevenson, and the city council voted in favor of this law. And once the law passed, it just exploded internationally. And within a year after the law was passed, the burglary rate in Kennesaw had gone, these are approximate figures off the top of my head, but they'd gone from about 55 to 60 a year, and they dropped down to 20 or 22 a year. And while the population of Kennesaw has grown significantly since then, it's up to like 27,000 now, and back then it was probably under 5,000. The crime rate, particularly the burglary rate, has remained certainly the lowest in Georgia for a city of its type. And depending how you juggle the statistics, it may be the safest town in the United States. So no one has ever been prosecuted under the law. There were exceptions built into it. If you're physically impaired, you don't have to own a gun. If you're a conscientious objector, you don't have to own a gun. So there were a lot of escape valves in the law. So no one's ever been actually tried for it, but it is still on the books. And Kennesaw does have a remarkably low crime rate. So the question always comes up, well, if nobody's been charged under the law, why did the crime rate drop so much? Well, first off, in 1982, probably 98% of the inhabitants of Kennesaw already owned a gun. This was the Deep South in the 1980s, you know, so duh. And the second reason is, as people started getting arrested for burglaries in Acworth or Marietta or other places, occasionally somebody would ask them, well, why did you do it there instead of Kennesaw? And they say, well, I know in Kennesaw everybody has a gun in the house. So they started shying away from committing crimes in this area. So it might have only been a psychological thing, but it actually did have an impact. So those are probably the two most famous things that have ever happened in this town was the gun law and the stealing of the general.
Wow. Now, we were earlier today at the battle site.
Which battle?
Exactly.
Kennesaw Mountain?
We were at Kennesaw Mountain.
Kennesaw Mountain.
Tell us a little bit about the Civil War history, other than the great look.
Yeah, other than the general, which I realized was all I talked about when we talked about the 19th century. Well, the Civil War hit Big Shanty big time in 1864. In May of 1864, William Tecumseh Sherman, which is a name still well known in this area, and not necessarily with positive connotations, put together a vast army. It was probably, I think it was easily the largest army ever put together in North America, certainly up to the time and probably since. There were over 120,000 men, and they mustered at Ringgold, Georgia, in May of 1864. And this started Sherman's Atlanta campaign. And his goal was to come down what today would be I-75. Of course, it wasn't there then. So come down to Western Atlantic Railroad and eventually take over Atlanta, because Atlanta was certainly the transportation and supply depot of the Deep South. So the idea was, if Grant could take Richmond and Petersburg in the north, and Sherman could take Atlanta and Savannah in the south, the war would be over. And they were right. That's what happened. So by late May, early June, there were starting to be the Southerners who were in Big Shanty, the Confederates, there started to be skirmishes just north of here in Acworth. And on June 6, 1864, there was actually an artillery battle in Big Shanty, and there's a wonderful letter that we have, and it's actually from two sources, so it was probably true, which said that there were some Confederate soldiers having breakfast in the Lacey Hotel. This is the same hotel from the great locomotive chase fame that we mentioned. So it's right here in Big Shanty. They were having breakfast, and they heard an artillery, a cannon go off, and the cannonball came in the front door of the Lacey Hotel, it went down the hallway, and it went out the back door. And that kind of signaled that maybe Sherman's army was closer than they had realized, and eventually they retreated. So Sherman actually used Big Shanty or Kennesaw as his headquarters, as a supply depot, and as a hospital depot for, 3 weeks in June of 1864. So at the end of June is when essentially he pulls out of Big Shanty, and that's when the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain occurs. Now, the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain really occurs over a several-day period, and it occurs in three different locations. But the famous, you know, where you see the famous paintings and the fighting's going on right below the peak of the mountain and all that, that was June 26th or June 27th, I forget the exact date since I don't have any materials in front of me. And it was a total disaster for the Union. The Confederates, who had the high ground, I mean, the Confederates had the ridge line. Union lost between 2,500 and 3,000. The Confederates lost probably 700, 750. But since, again, Sherman had such a huge force, he lost that. He outflanked and continued heading toward the Chattahoochee. And on September 2nd, 1864, of course, Atlanta fell. So Sherman takes over Atlanta. And I should point out those famous scenes of Atlanta burning that you see in Gone with the Wind, that actually happened.
There goes a cannon.
Yeah, there's the artillery reenactors. That actually happened. Atlanta did burn, but it wasn't burnt by Sherman. The retreating Confederates, because they couldn't take all the supplies with them, they blew up the munition dumps. And when they blew up, the southern part of the city caught on fire. So all these years, Southerners have been blaming Sherman for that, when in fact it was their own retreating troops. But I digress. So Sherman takes over Atlanta. And then the head of the southern forces was John Bell Hood. And in early October, he decided to try to cut off Sherman's supply line in the rear, which was the Western and Atlantic Railroad. Once again, the same railroad the general ran on and all that. So early October, he brings his troops up, and they fight another battle at Big Shanty. They fight a battle at Acworth on October 5th, and the Confederates actually take over those towns briefly and cut off Sherman's supply line in Atlanta. And then there's an even bigger battle at a place named Allatoona Pass on October 6, 1864, which is a little bit north of Acworth. So when you said the battleground, when I asked which one, I thought you might be talking about Allatoona. Sherman gets really ticked off that Hood has cut off his supply line. Sherman sends 55,000 troops up from Atlanta, and they very quickly take Big Shanty and Acworth back. Samuel French, the Confederate commander who attacked Allatoona Pass, is beaten back at the pass, and Sherman eventually takes over the whole area again. Then in mid-November, Sherman issues an order to essentially burn everything from Acworth down to the Chattahoochee River, so the Lacy Hotel we keep talking about was burned to the ground. There are no pre-Civil War structure still standing in Big Shanty within the half-mile radius city limits. It was all burned by Sherman. And then in mid-November, November 15th, 16th, whatever it was, Sherman starts his march to the sea. And that's probably a little more well-known than what happened in Big Shanty, but by Christmas time, he's taken over Savannah. He presents Savannah as a Christmas present in a telegram to Abraham Lincoln. And, of course, the war ends within several months after that. So Big Shanty was right in the thick of things. There wasn't major battle here, but there were some minor battles. Sherman did use it as a headquarter, and 20 minutes south of here, a major battle did occur, which is the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain.
Thanks for listening to this podcast episode. And now for a small thank you to our listeners. Thank you all for participating on a Frapper Map. Today's Frapper Mappers are J.G. Fellow from Cambridge, M.A. He says, loved your Sealand show. Terrence from Fountain Valley, California. Eric Edwards from Santa Clarita, California. David Noble from Scotland, who says, definitely going to tell my pupils to listen to your excellent podcast. See my project at bocher.lipson.com. bocher.lipson.com. Alan from Long Beach, California, who says, great show. Thank you all very much for your encouraging words. I really do appreciate them. You can contact me via the History Hotline at 206-339-7278. That's 206-339-7278. Or email me at historypodcast@gmail.com. You can also visit the website at historypodcast.blogspot.com. Stay tuned if you'd like to hear everything else that was recorded at Kennesaw Mountain National Battlefield Park.
Brigade to start firing. He had ceasefire. brigade usually. And to the left and right of you, you also had multiple brigades. And then you had reserve units behind you with buglers. And you heard a call go off behind you. How would you know that call was for you? And this was a big problem during the war. In fact, there are some of the regiments reported that they actually were out on the battle for charge and retreat, both at the same time, so you had your choice. To be in that brigade would hear that, they would know the very next call was for them. And this is an this is one of those unofficial calls that we have. This is an actual one used by a federal brigade during the Civil War.
Okay, if you listen this far, then you might want to hear the last little bit. Prepare yourself. This is what a cannon blast sounds like when you're standing almost right next to a cannon.